Last week, I discussed the significance of the poem that God tells Moshe to write down in Parshat Vayelech. Ve'ata kitvu lechem et hashira hazot. Now, write for yourselves this poem and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouths in order that it be a witness for me with the children of Israel. I noted that the definite article stands out, hashira hazot, not just any poem, but this poem, prompting us to ask, what poem was this? Most of the classic medieval commentators understand this to be a reference to the poem that makes up most of this week's parsha, Hazinu. This reading is borne out by the final line in Parshat Vayelech, which describes Moshe beginning to speak the words of this poem into the ears, be'oznei, of the whole congregation of Israel, perfectly teeing up our parsha's lead word, Hazinu, give ear. Yet the Talmud considers another possible meaning of the phrase, this poem. In search of proof that the Torah was given to all of Israel, the verse above is cited, indicating that this poem refers to the entire Torah. An objection is raised and then refuted. Ve'ata kitvu lechem et hashira hazot. Now write for yourselves this poem, meaning the Torah. Hashira lichuda. That's just the Hazinu poem. Laman tieli hashira hazot le'ed bivnei Yisrael. But it also says, so that this poem will be a witness for me with the children of Israel. God said not only to write this poem down, but also that this poem was to serve as a witness. This seems to settle the matter. This poem must be the Torah itself, which acts as God's eternal witness, testifying to the divine revelation and to God's will. The Talmud is likely picking up on the fact that the Torah is also called a witness, just a few verses further on in the same chapter. Moshe took this book of the Torah, et Sefer HaTorah Hazeh, and placed it alongside the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal Your God, and it remained there as a witness. Vayasham Becha La'ed. The book of the Torah is a witness, and the poem was to be a witness. So, the Talmud presumes that the whole book of the Torah is sometimes called a poem. Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Netziv, the last head of the Volozhin Yeshiva and one of the great Torah commentators of the 19th century, in the introduction to his masterful commentary Ha'emek Davar, cites this passage from the Talmud and then asks the obvious next question. Ha, mi ha'yesh lahavin, hech nikra kol ha'Torah shira? We still have to understand, however, how could the whole Torah be called a poem? For surely it is not all written in the language of poetry. Of course, there are certain sections in the Torah that are explicitly written in verse, like Parshat Hazinu or the Song of the Sea, and even laid out in their poetic form by scribal tradition. We might detect rhythmic structures in other passages, parallelism, alliteration, even rhyming, and so presume that they are also intended as poetry. But there are some parts of the Torah, extended narrative sections, details of ritual law, genealogical tables, that are clearly written in prose. So how could the Talmud suggest that we might refer to all of the Torah as a poem? The Netziv answers with a theory of scriptural interpretation that has deeply shaped my own study of Torah ever since I came across it in one of Nachama Leibovitz's Gilyonot. He begins by naming two qualities that Torah has in common with poetry. Ela al ken yeshba teva viskulat hashira. Rather, the answer is that the Torah has in it the nature and the richness of poetry. For the Torah speaks in melitza, a figurative language, and it is well known to anyone who has studied it that this kind of figurative language is very different from the language of prose in these two qualities, in its nature and its richness. Bateva uvaskula. The Netziv proceeds to consider these features one at a time. First, the idea that all of the Torah shares some essential nature, teva, with poetry. Debashir ein ha'inyan mevuar yafe kmo basipur prazi. For in a poem, the idea is not fully explained the way it is in prose. And so, one has to make explanatory glosses, saying that this stanza refers to this story, but that stanza refers to something else. And that's not what's called creative interpretation, drush. That is simply the nature of poetry, even the most common poetry. This is the nature of the whole Torah as well, whose stories are not fully explained. Rather, one has to make insights and explanations based on the intricacies of the language. And this method is not called drush. On the contrary, this is just the most straightforward way, the pshat, to understand the verses. The nature of poetry, as opposed to prose, is that it is a condensed way of using language. Words are chosen carefully, not only for their literal meaning, but also for their sounds, forms, and associations, and then arranged into a precise structural form. This style of writing requires the reader to engage in both close analysis of the text and a kind of meditative contemplation, as one searches out the meaning that the poem alludes to, but does not fully explain. The Netziv then suggests that, though the Torah may not all be written like a poem, we are meant to treat all of the Torah with the same linguistic sensitivity that we bring to a poem, presuming every word, every grammatical form, and every placement to be significant. When we read the Torah, we are invited to interpret not just the plain meaning of the text, but also the intricacies of the language, in order to unearth deeper layers of meaning. The Netziv emphasizes that this is not a matter of taking creative license. This is the way the Torah is meant to be interpreted. And so this kind of literary analysis, of form as well as content, is in fact the pshat, the most straightforward approach to understanding the Torah. The Netziv's observations have so far been methodological. An appreciation of the shared nature between Torah and poetry can help us with the question of how we read and interpret the Torah. But the second quality that he says the Torah has in common with poetry, its richness, or sigula, is related instead to the experience of reading Torah. The word for richness here, sigula, we might also translate as treasure, for it indicates something of great value. The Netziv is suggesting, then, that there is something that poetry can teach us about the encounter with Torah. He says, "Debashir yesh sigula lefe'ara b'remazim." In poetry, there's also a richness that comes from it having been adorned with all kinds of hints at things that are not part of the main idea of the poem. Like the custom of using the first letter in each line to spell out the alphabet or to write out the poet's name. There's a richness that's special to this indirect language and not to prose. It's well known that in order to achieve this richness, the composer will often have to almost bend the language so that the beginning of each line will be the precise letter the poet is seeking. So it is exactly with the whole of the Torah, all of it. Aside from the most basic, straightforward reading, there are many secrets and hidden ideas in every word. Because of this, there are many instances when the language of the Torah is not to be read exactly as it appears. And all this is not true for the Holy Torah alone, but with all of sacred scripture. To compare the richness of the Torah's use of language to the artistry of a poet's craft is to remind us that the Torah is, among other things, a sublime work of art. We read Torah, then, not only in search of meaning and information in its content, but also to admire the beauty of its artistic form. This appreciation for the beauty of the Torah has a theological implication as well. Those adornments that come in the form of hints, patterns, stanza bending, all the hidden treasures that catch our attention, are like signals to alert us to the presence and intentionality of the hidden composer. An experience of the poetic richness of the Torah, the Netziv suggests, is thus a form of divine encounter. As we prepare for another form of divine encounter, the imminence of God during the days of awe, we are reminded by Parshat Hazinu that the end of the year is also the end of another cycle through the Torah. As we survey the relationships in our lives during this season of reflection, let us also consider our relationship with Torah this year. Did we move through the Torah carefully, slowly, meditatively, noticing each twist and turn of phrase? Did we savor the words of Torah like a poem from our beloved? Did we let them wash over us envelop us, vibrate within us when we heard them chanted? Did we hear the poetry of the Torah this year? If the answer is not yet, well, the year is not quite over. Read the opening lines of Parshat Hazinu this week with extra care. And I will be back with you one more time during Sukkot for Parshat Vezot HaBracha. Until then, I wish you all a Shana Tovah.